WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. As a Black woman magistrate or judge in South Africa, Tandiswa Ndita has good news to share with women. They are granted equal rights under South Africa's new constitution. Ndita is one of the women profiled in a new documentary called A Woman's Place, which premieres on public television Friday night. Since 1986, she's worked in a poor rural area called Mount Frere, which is very similar to where she grew up in the Transkei Township. Many people in the rural areas haven't even heard of the new constitution, and many of the men, including some of the chiefs, don't want to grant women equality. They prefer to uphold the customary laws, which say that women are perpetual legal minors and can't hold property or inherit property. Tandiswa Ndita's early life was shaped by these laws. Her father died when she was just a few months old. I asked what happened to her mother after his death.
After the death of my father, my mother had to leave the homestead because she did not have a male descendant. That is, she only had daughters, were four daughters at home. Some male relative had to be appointed to head the household. And that male relative, in turn, had a concomitant duty of support towards my mother, which he failed to perform and rather chased her out of the house because she had no heir to the estate. So she had to go back to her home, try and build a new house and try and earn a living. She had no profession. She had to earn a living by performing odd jobs like making brakes for sale, working in a hotel, doing this and that to make ends meet for her four children. She had to put them through education. She had no money, she had nothing, but she did her best by doing all those odd jobs and managed to put all three of those daughters through college.
So she lost all of the family possessions because women aren't allowed to inherit?
She lost all the family possessions because she did not have an heir, that is, she did not give birth to a son. And because some male who was irresponsible was appointed to manage the estate, because she, as a woman, had no right to the estate.
Did she think that there was something wrong with the law?
She felt bitter. She thought that something was very, very wrong. Because she never viewed herself as, like, being less than a man. She always instilled it in us that, look, you're just people. That's all you are. There's no one superior to the other. You're just people. You are equal.
Now, in the village that you're working in, which is far away from the city, and there's really very little in the way of automobiles or any kind of real connection to the world beyond the village, a lot of the people there have never even heard of the Constitution, and yet your job there is to teach them about it and to uphold it. What does the tribal law that the people have been living under say about women?
The tribal law governing the rights to women is that women are perpetual minors. It is the same Administration Act, in fact, that governs the rest of the Transkei, the Black Administration Act of 1927, which is codified customary law, and also customary law, which is not codified. That means in terms of custom, women are regarded as minors. They are subject to the marital power of the husband. They have no locus standi in law. That is, they have no place in law. They cannot stand in law on their own. Like if you are a woman, you want to sue someone, it has to be quoted that Tandiswa Ndita duly assisted by her husband, so and so.
So you can only go into court if your husband is assisting you. What if your husband is the cause of your problem?
You must be duly assisted by another male descendant from the same family.
Ah.
ridiculous.
Yeah, that makes it very difficult, doesn't it? What are some of the typical arguments that you have been getting from men who think that this new constitution and the equality that it offers women is ridiculous, is an insult to them?
Most men feel that, look, the constitution is here to take away our cultural rights. It is in our culture that women are subject to the marital power of men. And it's now good. That's how they feel. It's now good. We don't need it. We want our culture to remain as it is. But in some areas, most chiefs are quite progressive. They already know that the law itself is made of social rules, and therefore social rules change with the times. So there's no reason why the custom should not change. There's no reason why the laws should not change. So they have already, like profiled in the movie, is another chief who has already in his area implemented changes like the right to land. He gives women the right to own land. It means that on his own, he has realized that there is a need to change the rules of custom, because I had not even been to him before when he implemented the changes. On his own accord, he realized that women need to be recognized as people in terms of the law. So you sort of get a mixed reaction, like some saying, look here, who is she to come and tell us about our rights? I mean, she doesn't know a thing. The custom has long been with us. And this constitution, it's relatively new. It is here. Like, they feel like, oh, the colonialists again are here to take away something from us. So it's threatening, sort of. I understand the anger directed towards the new constitution. But there is a need to educate the people that it is not here to threaten their rights, their cultures. In fact, it is there to protect the same cultures and rights, but only to uplift the standard of women.
How do you explain to the people who want to uphold tradition that this new constitution is not the work of colonialists, it's the work of the new South African government? Nelson Mandela is one of the people behind it.
That's a very hard one. You have to start from scratch, because the colonialists first codified customary law, which was not codified. Now, that means that it entrenched rules that would be difficult to change. It would be difficult to change the law, an act of parliament, whereas custom, which is not codified, can be changed. It is governed by the rules that govern society at that particular point in time. Now, you have to start by saying that you know the history of South Africa. You know where we're coming from. You know when the colonialists took the land from you, the African National Congress had to be formed. Many other political organizations also came up. This was all fighting the rule of the colonialists. You have to tell them that we are where we are today because men like Nelson Mandela went to prison so that you can be freed. Your freedom is the constitution that we now have, because without it, there would be no rights guaranteed in the country. So it's a whole thing like, what do you know? What do you know? I mean, you are a woman, you are young. I mean, you can't tell us about our history. We were here, we know better. So you just have to have some patience. You have to persevere and come up with the story and somehow convince the people that the constitution is the best thing that ever happened to South Africa.
I can see how it would get difficult and even confusing for some people. After all, you want to uphold respect for elders and respect for tribal traditions. But on the other hand, some of those traditions are very unfair. So is it, can you talk with the people there about distinguishing between traditions that are fair and traditions that are outdated and are unfair, that are hurtful?
Really, tradition is really belief. Belief depends on what prevails at that particular point in time. Like, what actually took away women's rights was the entrenchment of the codified customary law. Because customarily, men do sit around, drink with women, they mingle with women, they smoke with them. I mean, it's culturally, you don't see any real difference between men and women, that is with people on the ground. They are equal. They go to the chief's court. They have been attending the chief's court. It's just that there are separate places to sit. Like men will sit on the other side and women on the other side. They have a right to speak in the chief's court. They can bring action in the chief's court, not assisted by anyone. It is only in the Mashree's court that they have to be assisted by any male member in the family. I don't know if I'm answering your question properly. There are just too many issues here. I'm grappling with all of them at the same time.
No, I understand, but I think it's very interesting that there's a difference in a woman's rights in the chief's court and in, you know, the official court of the country, in the magistrate's court. So I think I see your point there, that the that in 1927, when the colonialists codified traditional law, they kind of set into stone things that would have kind of naturally evolved if left on their own.
Oh, yes, that's what I'm saying, exactly.
And do you think that some of the rules that make men superior to women would have kind of naturally evolved if the law was allowed to naturally evolve?
Those rules would have long evolved naturally if the law had evolved. Look where we are now. We have, we still have the Black Administration Act of 1927 operating, and it's 1998, and we have a new constitution. We still have a gray area because that Black Administration Act has not been repealed. So that means that it's sort of, it puts us at a disadvantage that customary law was codified by the colonialists. In fact, they needed to have control over the natives.
Well, it's a real topsy-turvy position now, it seems to me, because the chiefs are upholding laws that were upheld by the colonizers, that were poured into, you know, written into stone by the colonizers, and you now, a representative of the government, is really representing the force for change, the force of equality.
That is true, but if we take the history back a little, you will realize that even those chiefs were British imposters. They were put there by the colonialists for their own purposes. They got remuneration for being chiefs. Traditionally, there's no remuneration for being a chief.
Oh, so even the chiefs were a sign of the colonial government.
Oh, yes. Even the chiefs were a sign of colonial government.
My guest is Tandiswa Ndita. She's a judge in rural South Africa. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Tandiswa Ndita, and she's a South African judge who works in a rural village upholding the new constitution, which grants equality to women and prohibits gender discrimination. She's one of the women profiled in a new documentary called A Woman's Place, which premieres November 27th on public television. Now, in the TV documentary, you seem very good-natured when you're arguing with men who disagree, men who believe that women should not have equal rights, that men are superior, and men need to have control. Is that something that you feel is important to do, to keep being good-humored in these discussions as opposed to getting very angry with them?
Naturally, you have to be good-natured when you deal with these issues. Otherwise, you could get emotionally drained. You know, you need to laugh at them. You need to laugh with them. That's usually my attitude when it comes to dealing with matters of gender with the males. What I usually do, I usually ask an appointment with the chief of that particular area. I think here you'll call him a tribesman. I first sort of try and conquer the chief to be on my side so that he introduces me to his constituency. And by the time I get there, I have him on my side. And it's not like it's just some heavy talk about women's rights. No, it's just a light conversation, which is eventually going to get them there where I really want them to get. Like recognizing that women are just people. They have rights like they all have. Besides, I have another added advantage. You see, I'm a magistrate in the area, so that means I'm deeply respected by the community. Now, usually in communities of a place like Mount Frere, a magistrate is seen sort of like a demigod, you know, stays next to the courthouse and he's sort of secluded, because you'll recall that most of the time they had only been white magistrates. I mean, it's only about for the last 17 or 18 years that they've had a black magistrate, and a woman for that matter. So they hold me in a very high esteem. So that's another advantage when talking to the community of Mount Frere. I've stayed with them for a number of years, and so that sort of adds some spice to their reaction. Like they react automatically to me. They trust me. They know that I wouldn't introduce anything that would take away their rights and their beliefs.
Now, I'm surprised in a way that you do get such respect. I thought that perhaps some of the men wouldn't respect a woman judge because it would be so unusual for them to see a woman with that kind of power, power over them, power over the men.
You see, after 13 years with a woman judge, you have no option but to respect her.
Well, did you get the respect early on?
Oh, no. The reaction was pretty hostile. You know, it would be like, oh, what does she know? She's not even married, you know. Even my colleagues, you know, say, Miss, just to make a point, like, we put you in your place, you know that? It's just that in life, you just prove your point. I've been with that community. They have seen how I deal with their complaints. So they have no reason not to respect me. They are somewhat compelled to respect me.
What are some of the typical cases that women bring to you now?
Oh, I deal with a number of cases ranging from criminal cases, civil cases, domestic violence, inheritance inquiries, oh, anything that you can ever think of is dealt with by me.
Do you deal with a lot of women who are in the same situation that your mother was in when your father died, where the woman is being denied the right to inherit her husband's property, even though the new constitution says that a woman should be allowed to inherit her husband's property?
On a daily basis, there will always be a woman who is accompanied by a man saying that, look, he wants to take all the money. He says that he's going to maintain us. It's his duty in custom. It's on a daily basis that I get such inquiries.
Do you ever bring in your own experiences growing up under those circumstances?
Although in my inquiries, I try to be as impersonal as possible.
Yes.
It sometimes happens that you can sort of get carried away, you know.
Uh-huh.
Like, when I really want to advise the woman to fight for their rights, I'll say that, look here, this is what happened to my family. You have the Constitution to protect you, so why don't you use the Constitution? Sometimes I do. I get carried away and think that, oh, no, she's not doing enough. Let me just nudge her to do it.
Now, when you rule in favor of a woman and against the man who says, no, this woman is a woman, she can't inherit her husband's property, what do you have to do to make sure that the decision is upheld? I mean, does the man automatically respect your decision?
So far, I have not had any appeals. If they did not feel comfortable with my decision, that is the man, then they would have to appeal to the High Court and say that, no, the magistrate erred in holding that the woman had rights, through an attorney, of course. But so far, I have not had any appeal from my decisions. I think it is largely because before I give any decision on the matter, I handle it traditionally like we sit on a round table and a very informal inquiry. We talk and talk. The man is allowed to vent what he wants to vent. We talk and talk about the Constitution until such time that by the time we reach a decision, we are agreeable almost about all the issues.
Do you think that the people in the South African government realize how disconnected the people in the rural areas are from the new constitution? How difficult it is to bring the new constitution to the rural areas?
The government does realize that there are problems with people on the ground. They know that they don't have enough public education. They know that they have not sold to the constitution to the people on the ground. So there are projects with the Department of Justice that are designed to work hand in hand with NGOs so that the constitution is brought to the people. But it is taking quite a long time, though. And I always believe that we have a good constitution, but what good is that constitution if it does not reach the people of South Africa? It's as good as if it exists in a vacuum, because no one will enforce the rights enshrined in the constitution if people are not aware of the constitution. I appreciate the work done by the Department of Justice, like public education, but it is just not enough. On the operational level, they need to get to those rural areas and educate the people about the processes of the law.
South African Judge Thandiswa Ndita, she'll be back in the second half of the show. She's one of the women profiled in the documentary A Woman's Place, which will be shown on many public TV stations Friday night. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Thandiswa Ndita. She's a magistrate or judge in rural South Africa. Her mission is to educate the people in her community about the new constitution. It grants women equality, but many of the men prefer to live by customary law, which gives women the perpetual status of legal minors and prohibits them from owning or inheriting property. Ndita is one of the women profiled in the new documentary A Woman's Place, which will be shown on many public TV stations Friday night. Now, you have three daughters.
I have.
But you're not married now.
I'm not, yeah.
Are you looked at as being very strange in the community where you work?
In one way, you could say that. You know, when I handle these domestic violence cases, the men will usually say, who is she? What does she know about family matters? I mean, she's not even married for that matter. Who is she to give orders against us? She knows nothing about married life. And they would normally say it to me, and why are you not married if you can handle these things very well? I said, then marry me if you want me married. Yeah, there was that kind of problem, like the man having an attitude. But it doesn't get to me because it is my choice that I'm not married. So I'm not bothered. And in fact, it is to make a statement like, I don't need to get married so that I can be recognized by society. I don't need to be in the sort of conventional family setting to be recognized by the society. I just need to be me, and that's it.
No, if you don't mind my asking, okay, were you ever married? And if so, did you have problems in keeping what was yours when you separated because of the law?
No, ma'am, I was never married.
So you never had to face what your mother faced?
I think that's one more reason why I never got married. You know that? It could be. It could be. I was too conscious of the history repeating itself. It could be I was trying to avoid the situation where my mother got herself into by getting married.
Losing everything when her husband died.
Yeah, that could be one more reason why I'm not married.
You have two sisters, and I'm wondering if they also got an education and became supporters of the new constitution.
I have three, in fact.
Oh, you have three sisters?
Yeah. The firstborn child also has a teaching degree and an honors degree. She's not bothered with the new constitution. The secondborn child is a business person. She's very much aware of her rights. She's very much aware that she's in an abusive marriage, I must say. So she keeps on phoning me. She wants to know her rights. She wants to read every material there is to know about her rights. She's in touch. She's generally in touch with the law. So she knows the constitution pretty well. And then the other one is working as a physiotherapist in a hospital in Gofimvaba, that is my hometown. She's also very much aware of her rights. I think the eldest sister sort of closed herself from anything. I think since she was the eldest when this all happened, she just decided that the law was no good. She doesn't want anything to do with the law. When the property was taken away, she was there. She could witness it. In fact, I was younger. Those are stories I heard. I was only about 6 months. So she's like, no. I don't need the law to protect me. I don't have to know the law. She doesn't want anything to do with the law.
Because she thinks of the law as a bad thing.
She thinks of the law as a bad thing. Educated as she is, she doesn't like the law. She says that we had to go through so much suffering because of the law. So I just don't want to bother with the law.
Well, I could really understand that, not only because of things like the inheritance law, but also just apartheid in general was the law.
Apartheid in general, yes. Apartheid in general. You see, for us blacks, you see a lot of radicalism because the law has never been anything for us other than oppression. It was an instrument used by the colonialists to oppress us. That is why today you find that there is very little respect for the law amongst the youth of South Africa.
Now, what kind of position does that put you in?
It puts me in a very difficult position because now I have sort of deviated in handling the criminal cases I daily handle. I have to go in depth. I have to try and educate. I have to try and make the youth understand that, look, we are here now. The past doesn't matter. We need to do what's best for our country. I have a program I call Juvenile Justice where we go to schools. We teach children about the processes of the law. Abuse, but there's not much time you'll realize because I have other matters to attend to, like the criminal court, the civil court, and the inheritance. So there's not much time for public education. But I work with social workers. I work with correctional services. I work with the SAPS in their community policing. Now that's where we get to the youth of the district, and we want them to realize that we have achieved what we had hoped to achieve as a nation. Now let's respect that. That is the message we're trying to get across, so that at least the youth of South Africa can stop being bitter, can stop being radical, can stop being reactive towards the law. They can just grow with the Constitution.
May I ask if your mother is still alive?
No, she's not. She died in 1993.
So, but she was alive when you became a judge.
She was alive when I became a judge, yes.
And she must have been thrilled by that.
Thrilled is an understatement,
yeah.
You know that? I don't know how to put it. She was overwhelmed, like she wouldn't believe it. And when I bought my first car, she just wouldn't believe it. You must realize that this is a woman who was very, very poor. I mean, that's not a unique history in South Africa. We all grew up poor. I mean, us blacks, we all grew up poor. It's no big deal. We're used to that situation. But in her case, she wouldn't believe that, I mean, one of her daughters would get to be a magistrate. It just kind of, I was afraid that she was going to just die when I delivered the news. She fainted and just like, no, it just can't be true. It was so exciting for the whole family.
That must have made you feel very good.
It did. It did. I must admit it did. Made me feel very good about myself. It made me more convinced that, look, whatever happened to my mother, I will not let it happen to any other woman.
I want to thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Tandiswa Ndita is a judge in rural South Africa. She's one of the women profiled in the new documentary, A Woman's Place. It will be shown on many public TV stations Friday night.